everybody, and welcome to the second episode of Resettled, A Human Journey, ECDC ACC's podcast. My name is Jariana Rodriguez, and we are excited to talk to you today about refugee resettlement. Today's episode will focus on the importance of telling stories of resettlement, but before I introduce our wonderful guest for today, Nezia has some announcements.
Hi everyone, my name is Nezia Monezero Fugayo. I am the Public and Community Relations Officer at ECDC here in the Washington, D.C. area. My only announcement today is actually Thanksgiving. As you remember last episode, Yariana said that it's one of her favorite events here at ECDC. And this one is happening on November 24th. That's a Sunday from 4 to 8 p.m. And we are inviting everyone to attend, as many people as possible. This is a great opportunity for you to come and meet our clients who have resettled in the past few years here in the area. And it's a potluck event, so we encourage that you bring a dish to share. There will be plenty of food from our clients as well, so you get a taste of the different food that we have available. And you can register for this event by going through our Facebook page, and you can just look for the Ethiopian Community Development Council on Facebook, or you can search for the Refugees First Thanksgiving event on Eventbrite. If you have any questions or would like to volunteer for Thanksgiving, you can get in touch with us. You can email Yariana at yrodriguez@ecdcus.org.
Thank you. And just on that, we are still looking for volunteers. We still have openings on decoration, our photo booth, sign-up table, and so on. So please let me know if you're interested or if you know anybody who is interested in participating in this wonderful event. So for this episode, we have invited Brandy Kilmer, Regional Program Coordinator of Their Story is Our Story, a nonprofit organization that works to collect and share firsthand refugee stories to cultivate meaningful relationships and to build strong and inclusive communities worldwide. So Brandy, thank you for joining us today. We're very excited to have you bringing about, you know, a platform to refugee stories and refugee voices is something that we have done for a very long time. So we were very excited to hear your story.
My pleasure.
So I want to start now with a question, but just a request. Just tell us a little bit about the organization, the mission, what you do, and how you got started.
Okay, awesome. So Their Story is Our Story, or TSOS, began as a group of people who were realizing they were at the peak of 2016 as we were seeing the influx in Europe in those refugee camps. They saw so many people saw refugees as a wave of or a mass of humanity instead of seeing them as individuals. And so they felt the importance of telling the story. So, you know, we had writers, we had photographers, videographers, artists, a group of people who got together and felt like they wanted to go and visit refugee camps and gain those individual stories so that they could be shared. And so really our mission, or name rather, explains our goal of showing that the refugee story is so closely linked to our own story. Mm-hmm. Their story is our story. And mm-hmm. So when we can look at the individual, then we feel a closer tie and understanding as humans.
So what countries do the refugees you feature usually come from? What has been the process for you to get these stories, and how do you target the people you feature in your stories?
So that's a good question. We are telling a global story, and we target every country where there are refugees. And right. We started, like I said, in a European focus. We had two of our founders that were based in Frankfurt, Germany, and so there were refugee camps that were close by. So they visited those camps as well as in Greece. And then from there, went to Paris and Italy and Syria and most recently they visited Bangladesh, where there's a large population of Rohingyas, and then recently visited Jordan. And so we've also had a team that's visited the southwestern U.S. border with a migration there, and then here in the United States, we're also gathering stories of people who have resettled. And right. so we want to tell not just those that are in camps, but those who are integrating into their community. So whether it be here or wherever their host country is. So here in the United States, I'm representing Washington, D.C., and I'm working on gathering stories here in the greater D.C. area. And we have representatives in Kansas City and in Indianapolis, Salt Lake City, Seattle, and Portland.
I'm glad you brought that up because I think a lot of people think that resettlement sort of stops once you arrive to the destination, and it does not. That's one of the reasons why we, you know, thought about this podcast, is to bring forth, you know, there are so many aspects of refugee resettlement,
right.
And we want to showcase all of them. So what have been some of the most impactful stories that you have heard from people that come to your organization?
So I think every person's story is an act of heroism and bravery. And so, and it's worthy of telling and archiving or collecting and sharing. But our most impactful stories are stories of refugee heroes, which are those refugees who are have started a new life in a new country and push forward to make that new country their home. And then in turn, they are the refugees who turn around and help other refugees while they're contributing to their local communities. So these are our most important stories that we tell. And one of those that we highlight on our website is Leonard Bagalwa. He was somebody who was kidnapped as a child and entered into the military through the militia there and was trained to fight. And he escaped through a series of people who were helping him in miraculous ways. And one of whom was a person that his mother actually had helped earlier in their lives as refugee escapees from Rwanda. And that person was then the head of the Malawi refugee camp and helped him resettle in Salt Lake City, Utah. And so in Salt Lake, he ended up being homeless, but he approached an older couple who were in the library parking lot, and he asked for help. That couple gave him a place to stay, gave him money for education, and he got a university education. And in afterwards, he asked how he could pay back their generosity, and they just said, "Do that by helping other people." Mm-hmm. So he got a job in the healthcare sector in helping refugees access healthcare. So he works with other healthcare providers in connecting refugees in that way. So
such a great story.
Yeah. Locally, I've just become acquainted with Luol Mayan, mm-hmm. who has been featured in the Washington Post.
Right.
And
you mentioned that earlier to me.
Yeah, I love his story. I haven't met him personally or interviewed him, but he was in a refugee camp in northern Uganda for 22 years.
Wow.
And he's 24. He's been in the U.S. for 2 years now, but he, as a younger person, had interest in computers, and he saw a laptop and wanted his mom to get him his laptop. Well, that seems so far-fetched, but his mom saved, I don't know how, I'd love to know more about her story, but she saved for 3 years, got him a laptop.
Oh, wow.
He had to walk 3 hours every day to a place to charge it.
Oh, my goodness.
And then taught himself how to code. And he created a game. Junob Games is his peacemaking game.
Yeah, right about that game.
And I just love the fact that he has, worked so hard to create an opportunity, and then he's using that in a way that is building peace. And to me, that's changing the world, you know?
Yeah. Those are really amazing stories.
Yeah.
I think, as you probably know, you already know from all the stories you've heard and from the book that I'm sure you will mention, that, there are lots and lots of stories like that. Stories of people who have overcome so much, yet spend most of their time trying to make the world a better place, because I guess nobody understands how terrible the world is as much as somebody who's had to leave behind everything they've known to seek refuge. So,
and I think I'm the same. And even when I've had a situation where somebody has lifted me, then your natural response is to want to help somebody else.
Right. Yeah.
And so I think that's kind of innate in a refugee story, is that their desire to help someone else.
Right.
And I honestly think that's one of the reasons why communities that accept and welcome refugees become even more resilient and more diverse, because it's that cycle of people helping people, and they want to continue that moving forward. So I think that really builds strong communities around.
And honestly, who wouldn't want that in their neighborhood? Exactly. Who wouldn't want a person who will go out of their way to help you if you have a situation that needs somebody's assistance? So it makes you just want to see more communities become welcoming and accepting of the people we serve, refugees.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned the book, because from our TSOS's initial interviews in refugee camps came a book that they published last year. And it's called the Let Me Tell You My Story. Mm-hmm. And it's basically all of the stories of those who at the time were still in refugee camps. Mm-hmm. Many of them have been placed and now are have jobs, and they're working towards self-sufficiency. And so that the refugee camp story is only a small snapshot. And those of us here can listen to those stories, and you want to help, but there's only so much you can do to help. When we recognize that refugees are in our community and our neighbors, then we can help. You know, we can help to make this their home. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's our goal, is to, in storytelling, is to create a way for people to recognize that the neighbor that maybe dresses or looks differently than we are isn't all that different, and that we can easily approach one another and become friends.
It's such a great cause. I wonder if you can talk about some of the common reasons you've found as you seek these stories, why some of the people you've spoken with became refugees. What are some of the reasons, some of the causes of their having to flee their homes?
Right. So refugees leave their homes for a number of reasons. It might be war, it might be violence, persecution for religious or political beliefs, or in some other ways that their lives are threatened. At TSOS, we use the definition of a refugee is someone who, in order to survive, is forced to leave behind their homeland. It's not something anybody wants to do. Even those who maybe lived in impoverished circumstances miss their homeland. You know, that is part of them, and long for the day when maybe they can return under better circumstances. But they come here starting anew, and it's not a nice feeling to feel like you're not welcome, and that you are trying to make the best of it, but maybe in a limbo situation. So I think many refugees who come are wanting to make this their home.
So before I go into my next question, I do want to find out, where can you get the book? I'm very interested.
So it's available on Amazon or on our website. I joined TSOS after the book was published, but I just think that the photography and the story writing,
the pictures look
just
great.
Well done. It's just a beautiful piece of art. And I think they had high integrity. They wanted to give dignity to these refugees, and really many of the shots are up close, so that we, you know, to bridge that gap. And then, you know, likewise to recognize that each individual is in fact an individual. They all have different stories. They all, you know, share a common theme of having to leave their homeland under violent circumstances, but it's beautifully done. It really is.
And for those who would like to get the book, like myself and Yariana here,
we're ready.
You can find it. Their website is tsosrefugees.org.
Right.
And again, the book is called Let Me Tell You My Story.
Right, and so future books are also going to be published from other stories that we're collecting, and you know, we have a website as well as Facebook and Instagram, YouTube. So we're trying to find many venues in order to get these stories published.
Well, going into that, why do you think it's important to give refugees a platform to discuss their experiences?
So one in every 108 people on Earth is displaced. That's just a recent statistics from the UN. At more than 70 million people have been forced to leave their home. So it's almost double from that of a decade ago. I'm just going to share a few more statistics here. 13.6 million fled their homes in 2018. That's mm-hmm. last year. And so 37,000 people are forced from their homes every day. So this is a global crisis that is not going away. We in the U.S., it's overseas, you know, it's easy to be, since it's distant, that the mass group can be easily dismissed as a problem. But what we have found in collecting these stories is that a refugee story is so important because it contains and explains their identity. Oftentimes, their story is all that they have when they've left behind all of their possessions. And so as they can share it and feel like it matters, like they mm-hmm. matter. And so many times when we've gone to large story collecting projects, we have people that are lined up for hours. They want to share their story. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a signal of how important it is to them mm-hmm. To not be forgotten and not be part of the mass. They want to be heard and known individually as people. So I think also sharing their stories, especially those who have overcome so much, gives hope to those who are earlier in their transition.
Right.
And
right.
so it can be so dark and so long and so many obstacles to overcome mm-hmm. that those are needful messages of hope for them.
And stories have very good way of doing that, giving you hope. I know for children especially, when they see refugees who have gone through the process, have grown up as refugees and have become successful, it gives you something to look mm-hmm. To look up to, and it makes everything seem possible.
Right.
And that's something that you need, especially when you have nothing else. I know in refugee camps, for young people especially, you don't see a future because you don't go anywhere.
Right.
You are basically in the refugee camp.
Right.
If you get food, you eat. If you have a classroom, you go to school. But you can't imagine, it's hard to imagine anything in the future because you don't know.
Right.
So these stories not only are important for helping welcoming communities understand who the people they are, who their neighbors are,
right.
Their new neighbors, but also helping people in the, especially young people. I like to focus on that area for right now because I know what an impact it makes.
Yeah.
And so I hope these kinds of books, these books that you're putting together, make their way back to the refugee camps where children can learn about what some of the refugees have become.
Yeah. So yeah. The thing with publishing a book, when I was doing research for this interview, it felt like it's too bad that we don't know that some of these people have moved on from there. You know, mm-hmm. it'd be nice to know what the rest of the story was. And when it's published in a book, it's kind of fixed,
right?
You know, but there's a continuation. And so this was a moment in time. Mm-hmm. But even in a short period of time, I'm just stunned at how much progress each person can make in their, mm-hmm. in their growth.
Yeah.
So
I like that word future, because a lot of our clients coming in, you know, we work with social services, so we ensure that our clients are applying for social security and have a place to live and all of that. But, you know, sometimes it's important to think about, you know, what is it that you want your future to be here in this country? Because I think not only does that give you hope, but it's also more than just surviving. It's about living, you know. Mm-hmm. This is their home now, and they have every right to make it.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So I am very white. I grew up in the West, Western United States, and, you know, I've had different life experiences, but I have not lived in Africa. I have not been a refugee. I've had not needed to flee my home for violence. And mm-hmm. so many of those things are just hard for me to even conceptualize. But for those of us that are like me, that are locals, and that when we hear a person's story, I think it's easier for us to see ourselves in it. Mm-hmm. And then to ask the question, what if it were my story?
Right.
You know, if it were my story,
right.
then what, you know, what if their story were my story?
Mm-hmm.
Then what would you want? What would you want somebody to do for you? Would you want, you know, it just promotes understanding and
right.
then, and it diminishes fears. I think easy for the narrative to,
yep.
to fuel the fears.
Right.
And that's easy to buy into those fears. Mm-hmm. But when we can hear individual stories, then we can look past that and recognize that, look, this person isn't a threat. At the very least, they just are in need of somebody to be their friend.
Yeah, definitely. And I that basically covers what I was going to ask you next, which was some of the ways refugees positively influence our society. And you can add to that if you'd like. But before you do, I just wanted to mention again that we started this podcast because of that exact same reason. We want people to, we want to encourage our listeners to put themselves in the shoes of the people we are talking about, of the people we are working for, the families who arrive here with nothing, with hoping that the neighborhood will become their friends, will become a place they can call home. And in most cases, it does.
Mm-hmm.
It does become home. I know for a lot of refugees who are resettled, the U.S. is their first place where they have had a home.
Mm-hmm.
So it
right.
does become, in every definition of the word, home.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted this podcast to serve as a way for people to connect with the refugees beyond just knowing that we have a certain number of refugees coming in, but who are they? What are they? Why are they here?
Right.
What do they bring to the table? What are they contributing to our society? So if you would like to add more to that, what do you think refugees positively, how do you think they positively influence our society?
Well, and I think that's part of what fuels the fears, you know,
mm-hmm.
is that, you know, we've heard all of those little snap phrases that I won't repeat here, but it's refugees, as I've done research and in my own interactions, I see that refugees positively contribute to our society, both economically and culturally. And so many of the refugees come, I mean, and I think we have to overcome some of our bias. For those of us who are local, just because somebody doesn't speak our language doesn't mean that they don't have skills or education.
Right.
And so many of them have skills and education from their own country. And
mm-hmm.
they once they can assimilate and learn the language over, you know, that initial period of time, then they have things that they can contribute and,
right.
and want to. And they've worked really hard to get here.
Most
and
definitely.
So it's not
yeah.
that they... and they. They want to have a purpose. They want to make a contribution. So they
mm-hmm.
have strong desires and man, they have grit and resiliency. And
right.
so, and that's going to show up when those barriers are gone, then they can make just huge impacts in our society. So,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's shown that even initially they're even paying taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And while there is some assistance that's coming to them, over the longer period of time that they're contributing to the GDP.
Right.
And so it's a higher income than it is the cost, at least over that period of time. Many of them become entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're seeing that because they've had to face risk and
mm-hmm.
overcome risk,
right.
they're more willing to be risk takers
right.
in that kind of venture. So
mm-hmm.
more so than maybe some of us who have grown up a little...
yeah,
more privileged. So,
yeah.
so I think so. That's kind of the economic side of things. The culturally, I think we all benefit from having a dynamic and a diverse society. And I think refugees aren't here to change what we have built in the United States or anywhere that their host countries are,
right.
but to add to it and build
mm-hmm.
upon. To add color and flavor, and I think they do in all of those ways.
Definitely, and I would have to also want to add that another thing that I think we don't really think about In the case of young people, again, I go back to, in this case, mostly like middle school, high school children. When they come here, it doesn't matter what country they are coming from. In most cases I've seen, the language is the barrier at the beginning. But once they learn English, they are doing far better than a lot of the kids.
Absolutely.
And so it makes you wonder, in all those years that they lived in refugee camps, not having access to really quality education, what would they have achieved had they had the opportunities to begin their lives, you know, before the resettlement process even happened? Resettlement program to me is a life-saving program. I always say that it builds up people who would otherwise not have the options that we do once we come here. So
I see that many of them, they don't take for granted what is available to them.
Not at all.
And so they're willing to take advantage of the opportunities that are available. So
you also mentioned the number of displaced people. They are, everyone knows it's a lot, millions. Only about 1% of refugees get resettled. You can imagine the kind of competition that is.
All right.
You can imagine the kind of person you have to be to succeed through this process, to go through all the interviews, face all the exams, and all the things that you have to do to be resettled.
Medical exams and all of that.
Yes.
And at the very least, they're very patient.
Yeah. and we need patience. We need more patient people. So, it's it basically, the people who are coming through this process are not going to take anything for granted. They're going to work very hard for everything because this is an opportunity of a lifetime that they've been waiting for. So, thank you for that great response.
I mean, I guess going into that, my next question is about false assumptions that people have towards refugees, and I will just give my take on that. As I used to be an intern, I then went to be a case manager and a program manager, and a lot of the community members that I had contact with had a lot of questions on the legality of the populations that we served. Are they allowed to work? Are they allowed to, you know, get a social security card, things like that? So it's a lot of misconceptions on the population that's coming in, but I will say that there is no one more vetted than refugees coming in. I mean, the whole process alone takes years, multiple security checks, immigration interviews, medical exams, all of that. So I don't think there's anybody more vetted than the people that are coming in as refugees.
I agree. And the, you know, any misconceptions that we have, and I just think that language is kind of a muzzle on anybody who comes to a country and doesn't know how, can't speak the language. Yeah. It just, that creates a lot of misconceptions. And so also they've been through trauma and many times. And so that kind of can read a little bit differently for those of us who are trying to be welcomers. And so I don't think that, you know, the false assumptions include the idea that our country is overrun by refugees when in fact the US used to be the number one in accepting refugees, as many as 3 million. In fact, from the post-World War II era to the late 1980s, we led the way in bringing refugees to our country. Now we place last in developing countries bringing in refugees, and this year it will be fewer than 17,000. So I think that it's incumbent upon those of us who are locals to, and I just was celebrating Governor Herbert's letter to President Trump, where he was saying the state of Utah is ready and willing to welcome more. And I just think that message needs to come from those who are allies, can express that to their cities, to their states and representatives, and because it is the communities that are those that are going to make policy. And so when the people in the communities are welcoming, then that will be a signal to those who are in leadership.
Yeah, and just because you brought up that letter, we need more of those. Mm-hmm. We have to have, as resettlement agencies, we have to have all states and localities, so cities, mayors, sending in these consent letters, mm-hmm. because now it's a requirement that they have consent before refugees are taken to their locations. So I believe right now we are 10% of the states have submitted letters. We need way more.
That's not a lot.
Mm-hmm. We need a lot more, especially because these are needed by January. So states have to bring them in to submit those letters by January. So we do. We are working with other resettlement agencies, other local agencies to advocate for our political leaders to do what they need to do. If it requires somebody going in and explaining why it's important that the city consents to resettlement, then people are available. Mm-hmm. In every state, in every city, there are people who are willing to go and talk about the importance of the resettlement program and why everyone should consent to allowing refugees in their communities. And with that, I'd like to proceed to the next question. If you could talk about why it's important, why do you think it's important? And I think we've talked a little bit about this throughout the conversation. Yeah. But why is it important that we change the way people see refugees, and how has your organization done that?
So our mission is to that these stories are can help change the perception and the reception of refugees worldwide. So that perception, that's what we talked about, some of those misconceptions. If we can rewrite that for people, then we feel like the reception of refugees will change. So the people will be more welcoming and create a welcoming environment for them to come to and be more willing to reach out and approach them. So there are many agencies that are able to support refugees.
Mm-hmm.
They are looking for volunteers always.
Right.
And so I think a lot of people who have good hearts and want to give support to refugees do so with material goods, which is a needful thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think beyond that, refugees need a friend. They need
right.
somebody who can just be side by side with them along the way. And for me, that's just been a rewarding part of
mm-hmm.
participating in refugee stories, is to recognize their goodness and how they add joy to my own life.
And in every community where there is a resettlement agency, there is a program for connecting refugees with community members as friends, people who are there to walk them through the process of integrating in the new community. For our program, it's called First Friends, and people sign up for however long they're able. Is there a minimum of time
no.
people can
so,
join?
Just to quickly go over what we're offering here is that we have this First Friends mentorship program where we match a volunteer with a family in need. Usually the process is a volunteer will come in for a volunteer orientation. I give two volunteer orientations a month, or they can go online and take the volunteer orientation session online. After that, they submit some required paperwork, and then I do a match. Basically, we can match you with a family, maybe a family that needs help learning English, a family that needs help applying for jobs. But really, they all need help just to be integrated into the community, just to have a friend to talk to. I've heard so many stories of our volunteers that even when they end their volunteering with the family, they're still friends
mm-hmm.
with them. They still
right.
go back and
right.
have tea and coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And
it just adds a richness
and
to
that's
life.
What,
it really
that's
does.
What the families
yeah.
need
and
in
that,
most cases.
Yeah,
so.
And that is absolutely
yeah.
what I want out of every
mm-hmm.
volunteer that comes through the program. That is really our goal, just to make sure that we're connecting people.
and a sense of belonging for everybody.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Going to the next question, what do you think are some of the obstacles that refugees face when entering the U.S.? And I understand that we have no time to go over all of them because there are so many.
Right.
But what are the main ones that you would
so,
think of?
So, of course, we've talked about the learning the new language, mm-hmm. But just simple things like getting a driver's license and navigating schools for their kids. And mm-hmm. a lot of that communication from schools comes by email, mm-hmm. and they may not, you know, may learn how to speak, but reading is going to be limited. Finding housing and jobs and bridging their previous occupations with new education and getting licensing and requirements and all of those actually are huge.
Yeah.
they're big. They're simple for those of us who are natives, but you know each step is a pretty big process.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I started as an intern in ECDC, I think one of my first families, they asked me how to make a doctor's appointment, and it kind of sort of got taken aback because I'm like, that's so easy. You know, you go online, you depending on the provider that you have, and you make an appointment. But it was just something that I honestly take for granted. I never really thought of in that way. And I appreciate the experience to learn, you know, and be able to not only give them information, but also receive that experience from them and understand a little bit more about their experience here.
Right.
I think we've spoken enough about perspectives. And
yeah,
so I'm going to move on to the last question. What have been some of the most heartwarming moments you have had while interacting with refugees?
So I started volunteering with an agency while I lived in Southern California, and I was motivated by one of the founders of Their Story is Our Story, when she was posting stories of her interactions with refugees mm-hmm. while living in Germany. And I thought, there can't be refugees here in Southern California, are there? and I Google search, yes, there are. So that agency, I wasn't a trained teacher, but I volunteered to, I speak English. I could probably teach somebody how to speak English as well. And mm-hmm. so from speaking English, I got connected with an Iraqi family who had just resettled a few months before I started. And they had adults, you know, their youngest daughter was 26, but the daughter spoke no English.
Right.
The father was a translator for the military there and came here on an SIV visa.
Mm-hmm.
And so they became just part of my heart. It wasn't enough for me to just teach the English class. I wanted to help this father who had an HVAC technician license
mm-hmm.
in Iraq somehow find a way to get employment here. Mm-hmm. I wanted to help this young daughter to learn how to speak so she could get a job, and her dream was to become a nurse. So
right.
So as we did so, they invited our family to her birthday party. It was when she turned 26. It was her first birthday party that she'd ever had, and
mm-hmm.
so I have me and my five kids and my husband, we show up at their apartment complex, and that just began. That kind of, it wasn't just a teacher-student relationship, it mm-hmm. became a friendship.
Right.
And so we then had them into our home, and for them to be invited into our home was just, it touched them so deeply. They were just so honored to have built that trust to be able to become part of our lives as well as us become a part of theirs. So it's just been so heartwarming to be able to see this young woman
mm-hmm.
who is just grateful to be able to walk the streets in safety, you know, on her own, and to get an education and to be independent as a woman. It's just been awesome to be able to see her get a job and get her education. She's going to graduate in next year from Irvine Community College. The husband is, or the father is now employed as an uh-huh. HVAC technician. They have their driver's license, and she and I keep in contact to just have those victory moments together
mm-hmm.
to celebrate together. Just these small victories that
right.
are actually just, it just makes me cry every time I just see them the overcoming such big challenges.
Right.
So,
and those are the beautiful stories of friendship that you know, make such a huge difference, because the goal here is to create generations of people who are understanding and welcoming, and seeing your parents do that with strangers, kind of, you know, not kind of, it opens up your heart. Mm-hmm. If you are a child observing your family be welcoming. I know when I grew up, when I was a child, my mom used to, we lived in a refugee camps, and a lot of the kids didn't have much. So if my mom saw a child whose pants were torn or something, mm-hmm. she would take them mm-hmm. and fix them for her. And I think a lot of the way I am now has mm-hmm. to do with me watching my mother feed mm-hmm. children who, you know, whose names she didn't even know sometimes, and take care of the kids in who needed somebody to take care of them in a way more, in a way that their parents couldn't. Mm-hmm. So your story, the family you have become friends with, those are the stories that influence other community members to say, hey, maybe we can do that too.
If I can do it, honestly,
right?
If I can do it, and it's really, and honestly, as you were talking about children, it was important for me not to just have my own experience. I wanted my children to also become welcomers as well.
And that's really important, because what difference does it make if you are volunteering all your hours, but your kid is in college and doesn't say hi to their mm-hmm. refugee classmate or mm-hmm. looks down upon them. So having that generational compassion too is really important. So thank you so much for your time and for being here with us today. You've shared some really beautiful stories, and I'm sure we'll both go in.
I'm sure
we'll both find the book and read more of the stories that your organization has covered. But there are plenty more of opportunities to hear and to share stories of refugees. I'm so grateful to social media nowadays, because it's so easy to put stories out there.
Absolutely.
And to make an impact through that. Everybody's attached to their phone anyway, so give them something good to read or watch.
So I would say to your listeners, if you have any stories that you feel like should be told, and whatever, contacting you or contacting us so that we can share those stories. And sometimes it's difficult for somebody to be willing to be interviewed, but mm-hmm. if they are willing to talk to somebody who could share their story for them, we would be happy to do
that. Yeah, thank you so much. And thank you to our listeners for joining us for our second episode. Let's see what we are excited to continue this journey that is very new to both of us, mm-hmm. but feel like it's so far so good, wouldn't you say?
We're not experienced podcasters by all means, but we are doing our best, and what we want is just to share our stories with you. And I think this was a great episode.
I think you did well.
We are just people on a mission, right?
That's right.
So you can find more information about us or about our guest for today. I believe I provided the website earlier, but if you didn't catch it, it's tsosrefugees.org, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, and you can find us on social media. You can find our local branch on Facebook at ECDCACC, on Instagram at, oh, that's very long, ECDCACCDC Metro.
It was the only name we could...
But it works. Our page is there. I promise you'll find it. And you can find on YouTube at ECDCACCDC.
And I will just say that the podcast episodes, you can find them in our YouTube page. So please go ahead and log in, go to YouTube, or go into our ACC website. Either way, you can find our podcast episodes there.
And if you'd like to learn more about what ECDC does for refugees and for communities around the country, visit our website at ecdcus.org. Thanks for joining us.